An untitled prose poem published in the August issue of Harper's Magazine caught our attention, and here's how it goes. A Bowery angel smoking a palm tree stubbed his toe on a comet, and pimples came out on his toenail as big as mountains. He swore so much that God made 8 new planets out of the conversation and peopled and faunaed and floored them eccentrically. The Almighty has a vein of humor. He made these planets and peopled them to give amusements to beings on the rest of the celestial plantation. The men were 800 miles long and a quarter inch thick. They slept on telephone poles, and animals with bodies as big as a pea, with 900 eyes each as big as a saucer, lived on these long men by catching them by the feet and sucking them in like macaroni. Now, name that writer. Allen Ginsberg? Charles Bukowski, maybe? No. That poem is the work of Thomas Edison. That's right, the Wizard of Menlo Park, the inventor of the light bulb, the gramophone, and the father of the invention factory, that Thomas Alva Edison, and it will soon appear in Volume 6 of the great man's collected papers. We're joined now by one of the editors of those papers, Professor Blaine McCormick, who teaches at Baylor University. He's with us from the studios of member station KWBU in Waco, Texas. And Professor, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks, Neil. It's good to be here to talk about Edison.
And pimples came out on his toenail as big as mountains. Professor McCormick, any chance Edison might have smoked a palm tree or two himself before writing this?
Well, it's certainly a vivid prose poem, but we have no evidence that anything like that ever occurred in his life. I think it's more of a... I like to look at what's coming out of the poem in terms of the literary references, the cosmic nature of it. It's a pretty broad world that he lives in, but we can go there.
It's a heck of a poem. Any idea what it's about?
No. I think he's venting in some ways. I think he's just emptying his mind. He had a great love of poetry. You know, people don't know this about Edison, but a very literate person, well-read, really loved Longfellow and Evangeline being a favorite. And so I think he just kind of fancied to write his own poetry and make connections in any way that he could, sort of like his inventions, but just, you know, using words instead of machines.
Like his inventions were a little different. Longfellow's poems had things like a meter and rhyme.
He certainly understood meter and rhyme. But, you know, Edison, you know, this is the guy that kind of carved some new frontiers for us in American industrial history. So I don't think he walked everybody's beaten path. So, no, we don't have just a whole lot of idea of what this poem's about or where it came from. There are a couple of these in his papers. There are other ones in earlier. Volume 2 of the Edison Papers has a prose poem, too. But they're just kind of out there venting rants, sort of. And maybe he just had to get it out of his system, Neil.
It could have been. Was any of it published during his lifetime?
Not to our knowledge. None of it was published there. These were just in his papers and in his private journals, and we've been going through there and finding them, you know, this many years, 75, 80 years after his death.
And I suspect even to Edison scholars like yourself, this must come as a bit of a head-scratcher.
Well, we know what to do with the patent applications and you know, the workbooks that detail the inventions, but these things they're harder to categorize. But they're not totally out of character with the guy. We also have his private diaries, you know, his library, the marginalia, his books. It's conceivable. It's just an outlier. But the key thing for the the average public is that it's just not something they expect to come out of this guy's head.
Blaine McCormick is an associate dean at Baylor Business School. He's with us talking about the prose poetry of Thomas Alva Edison. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, Professor, you're right. I mean, we think of Edison as the, almost the embodiment of the, the practical American tinkerer. and yet he does have this this poetic side to him.
He does, and it just comes from influences. But that may have been what made him a great inventor. Neil, he has this phrase that we've quoted him on. He says, "Inventors must be poets that they might have imagination." And so he understood, I think, how poetry can fuel the creative process in ways that just, the basic scientific process, let's say, can't do that. Maybe this was some of the stuff that fueled, 1,093 patents.
And the creativity, and again, we think of practicality, I mean, screwing the light bulb, but this is enormous creativity to come up not just with all of those patents, but with a technique to, he basically invented what we call modern research and development.
He did create modern research and development. In fact, he had the invention factory there. They could crank it out with the best of them in terms. He said, I want to have a major invention every couple of weeks there. But let's just look at the industry. Well, we wouldn't be talking today, number one. He was key on microphones. He was key on, electrical systems. the recorded music industry, the film industry.
Electricity.
This guy's legacy. Electricity, yeah. This guy's legacy. Concrete is one that's often overlooked. Storage batteries. In fact, he had electric cars early on, and those kind of fell by the wayside when the internal combustion engine just seemed a little groovier and won more races. But he even had electric cars he was trying to get off the ground,
and
so to speak.
And a pioneer in the movie business as well.
Pioneer in the movie business. He tried to write a science fiction novel. If I could round out his character a little bit, this poetry falls into place. But he toyed with writing a science fiction novel, and he kind of developed several scenarios for those that we found in his papers. And, you know, it's just clear there was a very full, a very creative, very imaginative mind. So whenever you hear a line like, you know, a Bowery angel smoking a palm tree stubbed his toe on a comet, it's strange, but not unprecedented when we look at his papers in context.
Was we talk about a science fiction novel sort of in the H.G. Wells vein?
Very much so. I have a selection from one if you want me to read that.
Please.
I brought one of those with me to give you an idea.
Yeah.
This is from – it's a collection of found poetry, and it's called In Unknown Regions. I'll tell you – I'll point to it later. But here's how it goes. It says, in the unknown regions of the Antarctic Pale – 1,100 miles beyond the utmost limits reached by explorers, there had been discovered, by the aerial navigation, a region of gigantic volcanoes, all in active operation, pouring immense volumes of lava down to the plains. That in the vicinity of these lavas were large lakes of water, whose waters were continually heated by the volcanics, so that on the shore and for leagues back, the land was arable and covered with beautiful vegetation and highly populated by people of the Mongolian type, and highly civilized, with a literature of their own, but without a science.
Wow.
That's just a scenario that he had for one of his science fiction novels. He developed, I don't know, 20, 21 of those scenarios, and
really?
We found those in his papers.
And that sounds...
But very active mind.
Yeah, it sounds not just like H.G. Wells, but a little like Conan Doyle as well.
A little bit.
Lost World, but, you know.
Lost World, you know, he had aerial navigation in there. You know, he just started kind of, he toyed with, you know, flying machines and things like that. But he started to pull on, if you look at all of his sources that go into his mind, from literature to science to, you know, futuristic thinking, it's a pretty rich mix. And so it's not surprising that stuff like this falls out.
Where did he find the time?
Well, he didn't sleep very much. We know that. He read a great deal as a child. He started to go deaf when he was young. He wasn't completely deaf, mm-hmm. but he was almost deaf. And so he spent a lot of time in libraries. He would ride the Grand Trunk Railroad as a child up to Detroit and, you know, do some business things. He would sell fruits and vegetables and candy and things. But he'd also spend the afternoons in the library. I think he tucked a lot of it away as a child. But he would, you know, I think he would read. I figure he considered reading research and development, so he would often read great literature. I found Shakespeare in his, you know, private journals. There's Shakespeare in there, Thomas Gray's Elegy, all kinds of things in the margins of his notebooks.
And I guess if he did it as a young man, I guess we can blame Mickey Rooney for all of this, who, of course, played young Thomas Alva
Edison. Yeah, he could be. But he also – he went to the Chautauqua Institute. His father-in-law founded the Chautauqua Institute. In fact,
this time –
in 1885, I looked up kind of on our calendar, August 13th, 1885, Edison would have been at the Chautauqua Institute. He married Mina Miller, and her father founded the Chautauqua Institute. So, you know, he did it as an adult, too.
Interesting. Thanks very much for your insight on the creative, the prose poetry side of Thomas Alva Edison. Blaine McCormick. Go ahead.
I'd say you can find the rest of them at edison.rutgers.edu. That's the homepage for the Edison papers. Click through, and there's a whole world in there if you want to know more.
Blaine McCormick, a professor at Baylor University School of Business and an editor of the papers of Thomas Alva Edison. He joined us today from the studios of member station KWBU in Waco, Texas. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.